Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
We'll kick tonight's good news segment off with a question. What happens when you're on top of the political perch and you get knocked off it? Well, in a great deal of political reporting over nearly four decades now, I've seen about every response. Some crawl off into a funk, others get bitter and angry, still others try to battle along in the political system, hoping to cling on to whatever they can. Some just wash their hands of it all and simply walk away to just get a life. My next guest on Open House has taken a different approach, quite literally a good approach. She's the former New South Wales Premier, Christina Keneally, who led Labor to defeat in March this year. She's now shining a light on the very good work of Opportunity International as an ambassador for that organisation. Christina Keneally is seeing this work firsthand in Delhi and Mumbai, India, from where she joins us now on Open House. Christina, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Great to talk. Tell us about some of the kind of work that Opportunity International is doing there in India. What kind of things have you seen?
Opportunity International supports what we call microfinance. Microfinance is basic banking services for the very poor. And it provides, many people might be familiar with it, it provides low loans, small, very small loans to people living in poverty at reasonable interest rates. Think about it this way. Here in India, some 500, 600 million people out of the 1.2 billion don't have a bank account. And for the very poor here in India, that means that their only way to get credit is often through the village moneylender, who charges anywhere between 80 to 800% interest.
Wow.
And quite simply, the poor often are poor because they can't get out of debt. So what Opportunity International does, it's an Australian organization. It raises money in Australia from donors. We're a charity in Australia. But then we take that money and we invest it in our Indian subsidiary, which is a microfinance organization. And they, in turn, invest in their 16 partners that operate in 19 states in India. And they provide these basic banking services, mainly loans, also insurance, to the very poor. And quite simply, it is transforming people's lives here in India.
And communities as well.
Absolutely. Look, yesterday we went to a slum south of Delhi. And this is an area that is not recognised by the government. It's an unofficial area. It's not recognised for residential dwelling. The community there have built what can only be described as a hard scrabble existence. One-room dwellings, you know, built out of whatever brick or concrete or tin they could secure. It's what you would imagine a slum to be. Open channel canals running water with sewage, you know, right through right past people's front doors. Very narrow, dusty laneways. You know, no provision for toilet facilities, or no safe provision for toilet facilities or rubbish disposal. It nearly broke my heart. There was something that looked like a children's playground, which was really a few swings around a dugout area where a lot of rubbish was disposed. So it was everything one, from a Western perspective, might imagine a slum to be. But in the midst of this, Opportunity International and their partner, a local microfinance organization, have gone in and a few years ago, and started loaning money to, really, to the women in the community. And we met with 10 women who lived in this slum. They are the most confident, optimistic people I have met. They were on their fourth round of loans, and for many of them, their first loan was a redemptive loan to get them out of the crushing debt from the moneylender. And they had the most amazing stories of, you know, opening little shops right there in the slum and going from living on less than $2 a day for their families to making $5, $6, or $7 a day. And they were some women were now opening their second and their third shop. They were employing people. They were creating a little economy there in the slum in which they lived, but they were also creating an opportunity for their children. You know, they were sending their children to school. They were sending their children to school well-fed and better dressed. And you know, it was just remarkable to see these women who were just... They were confident in their business skills. They had hope for their children and for their future. And all because they'd gotten a loan, some of them as little as $60 or $70, paid it off, created a credit history, created a bank account, started saving. It was remarkable that in the midst of such dire circumstances, there were people living with hope and optimism for the future.
Spectacular work. What are some of the businesses? So the money essentially goes to setting up a little business. What are some of the businesses, essentially it's mostly women, are setting up?
Well, first of all, you're right. It is mostly women. We look for families that we can support with the provision of microfinance, but we usually lend to the woman because she's the one who's home. The man, the husband, can often be out trying to find work. But we also find women are change agents in communities. They transform communities. And so 94% of our clients are women. The shops can be the change agents in communities. They transform communities. And so 94% of our clients are women. She hard boils them. She sells them for 5 rupees. She told us she's making 250 rupees a day, which is about $5. And she said, "I'm making so much money." She wanted to take out another loan to help expand her shop. She, in fact, was starting to add a few other items to the shop. But a simple value add, hard-boiled an egg, and turned it into a money-making exercise. But then there were other women. One woman whose children were a bit older, her first loan, she actually loaned it to her daughter and helped her daughter set up a cosmetics shop. And the daughter... Which is interesting, first of all, because she loaned the money first to the daughter, not the son, in the family, which is a bit of a very revolutionary idea in India. But the daughter made the money back and then went on to make more money, paid her mother back. The daughter's studying accounting. The mother then loaned the money to the son. He set up a mobile phone shop. Right there in the middle of the slum, this mobile phone shop, we visited it. It was, you know, the size of a closet. But there was the son. He had his mobile phone shop. He's also studying now for a diploma in tourism management. The shop is doing well enough that her husband has stopped traveling around looking for work. He's now living at home helping run the shop. And the family is living off the money that this shop is making. And they're sending two of their their children in their 20s through a higher education.
Wow.
It's amazing. You think they're in the middle of a slum, there's someone running a little mobile phone shop and studying in a higher education.
I can't imagine how uplifting this is, and such a world away from our existence and your existence especially, to see this happening and such a difference being made.
I admit I had trepidation about going into the slums. I wasn't sure what to expect, you know. And I suppose, Western idea of poor people is that they're either desperately sad, or often we think of the poor as dysfunctional. You know, these were very functional communities.
Yeah.
These were very optimistic people. They were poor. They were just poor, and I mean that in the sense that they just lacked resources. And what microfinance is giving them is the opportunity to create social capital, to create, you know, monetary capital. And can I also just convey this? For many of these women, it's actually creating an identity, both a legal and a physical identity. For some of these women, the first time they've ever either seen their name in print or signed their own name was with their loan papers.
Wow.
And so many of them have said, when they saw the loan papers, they said, "That's what my name looks like." you know, how can we even imagine what it is not to know what your name looks like in print, to suddenly have an identity in that way?
And especially because the vast majority of the world's extremely poor are women.
Well, the statistics here in India are startling. India, you know, is the fourth largest economy in the world. It has 4.5% of the world's billionaires. And we do think of India as this powering economy. But India also has 900 million people living in poverty. You know, 1.2 billion people, 900 million living in poverty. And for, if you take the total of the poor in India, it's about a third of the world's poor live in this country, more than the 26 poorest countries in Africa combined. And so India is this country of stark numbers and big numbers on a scale that are hard to imagine. And, you know, we, Opportunity International, we support some 1.3 million families in India through as microfinance borrowers. Mm. But it's, you know, even there, we're not even touching the whole of the iceberg. It's just the tip. And it's extraordinary to think that these women and these families are transforming their lives. But it still points to what is a country of just extraordinary extremes.
Yes. Why, of all good causes that you could have become involved in, did you choose Opportunity International?
I went to an Opportunity International event and met a woman named Rajini. And Rajini runs the Indian subsidiary of Opportunity International that actually does the microfinance operation. She was remarkable. She had remarkable stories of women who were transforming their families and transforming their futures and who were very positive and hopeful. And when I learned this statistic that 94% of Opportunity International's clients are women, and there's a 97% repayment rate, and you think about the fact that women do make up disproportionately the majority of the world's extremely poor. And it's always been my view that, as a feminist, our greatest challenge as a movement remains the situation of women and girls in the developing world. Mm. And access to education, access to an identity, access to capital, both social and financial, you know, the ability to determine their own lives. And that's what this organization is doing, Opportunity International. You know, and it's an organization that has a Christian mission, that is to serve the poor and to alleviate poverty. But it's an organization that lives it out in a very practical, tangible way through microfinance. Yeah. And it's a really clever idea as well. $1 raised in Australia can be leveraged between 4 and 7 times here in India in order to get additional financing here in India. And then it can be recycled over and over. Once a loan is repaid, that money goes back out to another client.
Yeah.
And so it's an innovative idea. It's an effective way to alleviate poverty. And it's serving women in particular. And I just think it's an amazing organization.
You mentioned its Christian roots. How much does your own faith inform what you've done and what you're doing and why you're doing this?
I have always had a view that we are responsible for the world in which we live, the community in which we live. And for me, who's grown up and is a practicing Christian and a Catholic, you know, I'm very much influenced by Catholic social teaching, social justice, and the gospel message to serve the poor, that the poor will always be with us, Jesus says, but that doesn't mean that we are helpless or hopeless. You know, as Christians, we are people of hope. We as Christians are responsible for helping to bring about the kingdom of God here on earth. And that's a responsibility we have. And you know, the Gospels teach us that to whom much is given, much is expected. You know, the parable of the talents, all those things resonate with me. I realize how blessed I am in the life that I am leading. And I also feel called through the Gospels to use the gifts that I've been given. And so if I can in some way support this amazing organization, which is doing amazing things with women here in India, I'm so grateful for that opportunity, because I've been blessed. These women have inspired me.
Yeah. And now you're telling a national audience about it. I'm interested particularly in the process you went through after you lost government in March this year. As I said, you haven't retreated into this funk, or you haven't turned bitter and angry. But interestingly and ridiculously, it was all this fuss about some hair extensions that led you to use your position for good.
Well, I mean, let me put it this way. I had known that post-election there were things that I would want to do and causes that I would want to support. But I suppose I hadn't quite realized what potential there was as a former premier to use that profile as a way to direct attention to those causes. You know, for me, it was the idea that I would go and work for some organizations that I wanted to support, simply because I had more time to do so and the ability to do so. But for your national listeners who may not be aware, I changed my hairstyle a few months after the election, and it became front page news here in Sydney on both the major newspapers.
Yes.
As well as
grown.
Ran on television a few nights running. So yes. I thought, goodness me, if the media is going to care that much about my hair, imagine what I could do if I tried to direct their focus on their things that really matter. And so I must say, it's been so good to be able to be here in India, to be using, you know, social networking and talking to media organizations like Hope Radio to really spread the message of what Opportunity International is doing.
Too right. I'm glad to give you the opportunity as well. No pun intended. From this perspective, yeah. Christina, and from the perspective of such good works where you are, how do you reflect back on that world of politics and being premier, the world that you came from?
Well, I am still in politics, I suppose. I'm you can legitimately say that. I'm a member of parliament still. Look, you know, I'm eternally grateful for the opportunity I had to serve the people of New South Wales as a minister and as the premier. It's an amazing opportunity that, at least as premier, only 42 people, now 43 people in the state have had. And, you know, some people have said things to me like, oh, you know, it was a bit of a poison chalice and I really felt sorry for you. And I say, you know, don't. Nobody made me take this job. I put my hand up for it. I fought for it. In fact, I fought a few blokes off to take it. I wanted it. And I look back at it and think, you know, yes, it was hard, but I knew it would be hard. And yes, it had some challenges I didn't expect. But on the other hand, I got to do some really remarkable things. You know, $2 billion in disability services, the largest single injection of money ever into disability services in Australia. You know, we lowered public transport fares. You know, I was present when we negotiated the new health agreement that brought, you know, over $1 billion into New South Wales. You know, those sorts of things are great opportunities, and politics is all about timing and luck and the art of what is possible. And so I used the time I had to the best way that I could, and you know, I just feel very grateful for that opportunity.
And good things, like with what you're doing there and seeing there, continue to this day through it.
Well, yes, and you know, one of the benefits well, I see it as a benefit of political life in high office, is that you have a public profile. And as you said in your introduction, you can choose a number of ways to respond to that. I have this benefit of having the profile that I do and the job that I previously held. As I said, I'm very grateful that I had that opportunity, but now it also affords me a different way to use that. And I look around and I think these women who I met yesterday, they are without voice in many ways. They're not even recognized by their government, but they are creating lives and they're creating futures for their children. And they're amazing women. And, I've just felt so awed to be with them. I just think if we in Australia, Australians have already put $36 million into Opportunity International. That's been leveraged here in India about four times, so about $120 million that has been able to have been loaned and reloaned to very poor people, getting them out of crushing debt and letting them get on with their lives and create a future for themselves. I'm very proud to be an Australian here in India, seeing the work that's happening here.
I'm so pleased to have been able to speak with you about it. Christina Keneally, thank you so much for joining us from India, and we'll put the details of Opportunity International up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.